This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
This is the Book Riot Podcast. It's a weekly news and talk show about what's new, cool, and worth talking about in the world of books and reading. Today is Thursday, June 2nd, 2022. I'm Jeff O'Neill, here with Rebecca Shinsky. We got graduations, you know, grade school graduations. We got field trips. I got attacked by crows on my run this morning. Summer is officially here, Rebecca Shinsky.
I've had my first accidental sunburn. I mean, not that I ever get intentional ones, but hashtag ginger life, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like walking the store to get milk and you have to like go to the hospital for the burning.
Yeah,
right?
My dad.
I mean, that's what happens if you don't lather up.
My dad used to joke that I could get a sunburn on the way to the mailbox, and like, he's not that far off.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I hope everyone's summer is proceeding apace here. For those of you who haven't yet joined the Patreon, if you're on the fence about it, last week's bonus episode was deals, deals, deals. We had a whale of a time. We had a really good freewheeling
really
time. And then we're going to record right after this show that'll be in the feed next week. We're bringing back an old feature, Half-Baked Ideas. So it's not book-related necessarily. I'll tease this to you, Rebecca. I have one book-related thing, but I think it's such a big idea, it needs to be its own episode. So I'll talk about that later.
Okay.
You know, you galaxy brain there. You sit to, you know, have a little espresso and a notebook and things get out of hand if you're not
Wait,
careful.
Does this mean you actually finally found the one perfect notebook? Did it unlock?
Yeah, it'll last about 6 days until I abandon it and start looking around. You know, got the wandering notebook eye. Yeah, lavender's nice. This moleskin hasn't paid much attention to me lately. I wonder what Field Notes is up to these days. So that's one thing that upped here. All right, let's do our first sponsor break, and we'll do follow-up and shorter news until we get into a couple of meatier stories.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Listener follow-up, you want to take the first one? This came in through a Patreon member here, which is pretty cool. And then I have an email follow-up that sort of conflicts it. So I don't know how we're going to do this, but you take first.
Okay.
But you go first.
Well, head-to-head listener feedback. We like that. So we were talking about A Winter's Promise last week and like puzzling over how did this thing we've never heard of end up on these Powell's bestseller lists. And we have a Wheelhouse member named Carrie, who believes she's solved the answer or solved the mystery, works at one of the Powell's locations, said that A Winter's Promise.
The one I go to.
Yeah.
That's the one I saw. Yeah.
Said that it was one of their, A Winter's Promise was one of their staff picks, and that it sold so well that then it got promoted to bestsellers, which are location specific for each of their stores. So if you go to another Powell's location, their bestsellers will be different. And she said she suspects it's because the paperback also is $11.95 in a world of $16 to $18 paperbacks. Mm. So good price point and a staff pick. Like you were talking, maybe it was on that episode, and we were negotiating about the features that an independent bookstore needs to have to be pleasing to us.
Now we're talking.
You were talking about the power of a handwritten shelf talker. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds to me like a Powell's staff pick, probably with a handwritten shelf talker, made this such a compelling title that it landed itself on that location's bestsellers. So, okay, that's Carrie's take.
So let me stop there for a second, because I love this feedback. Thank you so much, Carrie. Carrie, if you ever see a gangly MF looking at notebooks with a wandering eye at the, in the section. You know what I'm talking about? You know, say hello. I didn't even consider the fact that we were looking at local conditions, right? Mm-hmm. That was not indicative of some other trend. I look at the Powell's bestseller shelf quite often, and I always thought there was some, like, maybe Portland regional effect. I never thought about a particular store's effect. Like, one particular bookseller got something moving enough that it rose up the ranking, and then it enters that feedback loop, which I think we talk about, but maybe we don't internalize enough, of once a thing is a thing, it's even more of a thing, because then it's a thing that people see. So it's number one on the list. I'm talking about it. Now people like me who are browsing it now see it, who wouldn't have seen it if it was, you know, just only spine out way back on one of the shelves in the science fiction and fantasy section. That kind of discoverability, that's why publishers always want to pay for co-op and stuff like that. If you put it out front, they want to be on the New York Times bestseller list because they want to sell books, and that there's the rear-looking indication of how many sales that means. But what they really care about is the forward-looking things. Now, that's a thing that people are going to be the tallest poppy in the field, and to look at that poppy versus all the others there. So that's a thing that actually happens. So here's the, it's not competing. It could be a different, you know, it could be, what they call it, simultaneous invention. Mm. But got an email. I don't think, I don't have affirmative consent for a name here. But anyway, this is someone who works in a bookstore in Iowa, and she says she brought in A Winter's Promise after burning through it, and then brought in three copies to sell, and since then it's sold pretty steadily at a, you know, I'd say a classic independent bookstores. And she says she originally heard about this title not so much through TikTok, though she sure maybe you've seen it there once or twice, but rather from various science fiction and fantasy booktubers and Mallory O'Meara, host of the podcast Reading Glasses, who also wrote Girly Drinks, which was really great. Yeah. I'm not ever sure I talked about that. Who's also a really good book person on the internet. Go shouts to them. That's the podcast. It's called Reading Glasses. So that's another, I don't know. It's not really conflicting, but it's not just, that would suggest there's a little more than someone at Powell's Hawthorne is like, boy, I found this gem. And all the copies being sold of this book are happening right here. So who knows?
Yeah, it makes me wonder if A Winter's Promise, and it's part of the Mirror Visit quartet, Carrie also corrected us, it's not part of a trilogy, if that quartet was marketed, like featured in some of the Indie Bound or Indie Next kinds of promotions that publishers do towards independent booksellers. I just wonder if it was, you know, marketed directly to them in hopes of hand selling moments like this, or did they just get lucky here? The like sort of circular feedback of thingness of hand sell picks particularly is a, I think, just a fascinating and cool thing that happens in indie bookstores. I know a couple of friends that work or own indie bookstores have said that it's really fun at the end of the year to run their like year-long bestsellers in the store and see which of those are like which ones are whose hand sells from the year. You know, I had this favorite thing and it came out 4 years ago, but I hand sold a bunch of them this year, and that's the power of your local independent bookstore over something that runs on algorithms. I always think that's fun to hear about and to think about how you know that influence, what the kind of a small pond influencer in a really meaningful way an indie bookseller can be,
and the kind of thing that one of the ways publishers try to get buzz for a book going is that way, because it's not really paid. There's a I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine element to indie bookselling, right? The booksellers want good titles to sell to their reader, to their customers, right? So they're motivated to find stuff that's interesting, and you can get this word of mouth going a little bit. I haven't heard in a while. It's interesting. We used to hear more often that something was like an indie bookstore hit or was made by like the indies hand selling. Mm-hmm. Is it just me? Have I forgotten? Have we not heard about it? Has TikTok the hurricane blown away all of the little sort of microclimates that we might hear about? Because like, what's the Water for Elephants? Isn't it the classic example? That's the one that always springs to my mind, is like Algonquin said, like that was an indie bookseller thing. Like on the ground, hand selling at bookstores made Water for Elephants a thing. I can't think of a recent one. So I throw it to you, Rebecca, too. But also, this is also a bat signal to all the indie booksellers and publishers we have listening.
Yeah, I can't think of a recent one either. I don't know if that's because COVID has changed and continues to change or to limit in-person interactions between book buyers and booksellers in a way that might have impacted this. Or maybe there was one in like 2018 and I just don't remember because everything right. before 2020 is a giant blur now.
That's right.
I would love to hear from booksellers who might have a better memory or a more available memory of that.
I guess the thing that distinguishes, or I guess it's a more recurrent feature than distinguishing one, there's a distinction with no difference that anyone cares about, is that, you know, what made for, if they don't exist anymore, like the anatomy of an indie hit, mm-hmm. an indie bookstore hit, it tends to be lit thick with some commercial crossover appeal, you know, plot, character, good writing, mm-hmm. not super challenging, but also it gives you fuzzy, warm fuzzies, but it's not cozy, if that makes sense. That's kind of my,
yeah.
I don't know. Does that sound right to you? What else would you say about the indie books?
Elevated book club kinds of content.
Yeah,
right. Have good potential. And really for anything to take off in that way, it has to be accessible and appealing to a wide variety of whatever business's customer base. And so that elevated book club kinds of stuff, which Water for Elephants certainly was. And I think they, you know, that was an Algonquin title and they did try to sort of run that back with a couple other Algonquin authors. And yeah. this is like a deep cut from our early blogging years, but Robert Gulrich's A Reliable Wife, I think was one of those.
Yes. Right.
I can't. Yeah. I don't remember.
New William Kent Kruger, I think they tried to do that with. Do you remember? They did some ads with us.
Yes, yeah.
But they were also trying to. That's the right kind of title. I think, you know, now that we mention it, that just jogged something in my brain. I think maybe like A Gentleman in Moscow or Rules of Civility, like the Amor Towles Industrial Complex maybe started out as an indie first kind of initiative.
I won't be terribly surprised, I guess, if we see this decrease in terms of at least big visibility. Mm-hmm. I think there will always be titles that are indie bookstore darlings, or especially to individual indie bookstores, like it seems like A Winter's Promises to a couple of these. But if we're not hearing about it on the big scale, like it's not an accident that Water for Elephants, A Reliable Wife, some of those really available big stories were from the time period they were from, where like book blogging was still kind of nascent in the way that most people who cared about books were not just getting on, they were not surfing the web to find their way to a book blog and get their recommendations. It was just sort of coming up. Facebook was still relatively young. Instagram didn't exist. TikTok was a glimmer in someone's eye at that point. And so the ways to find book recommendations that were not going into bookstores were just limited, or reading, you know, big media book reviews. And now there are just so many other sources. That space is so saturated, for lack of a better term, of places to get recommendations that having something rise to, when you're talking about millions of views on TikTok versus a couple thousand independent booksellers got excited about something, there's still no competing really with that scale.
It does make me think that the first mover against the, I guess the visibility of something that did especially, or an indie bookselling darling hitting a list that we would even notice about and hear a story that's an indie bookseller generated interest or sales. I think you're right. It's a celebrity book club, right? I think it's every month Reese has a pick, and those people, the Dictionary of Lost Words, that would be the kind of thing that would be an indie darling. It's very, you know, that's, you look at what Reese picks or whatever her team picks, and I still need to know this. I don't know how we need to find this out.
Someday we're going to get a Reese birdie.
Every single one of those could, it's hard to pick in advance, but in retrospect, if you told me any one of those, like, yeah, actually that was an indie darling, I'd be like, yep, that totally makes sense. Celeste Ng, sure, indie darling. That makes total sense. The debut author, Taylor Jenkins Reid, yep, makes total sense.
Britt Circe, Bennett.
Total sense. Yeah. Britt Bennett, yeah. All of those, that's the thing. And you're right. I wonder, with the hurricane blowing, does it really matter to try to get a bunch of little windmills spinning? Just take what you can get. Another quick email follow-up here related to independent bookstores. A shouts to Dog-Eared Books. This is in Ames, Iowa. We had someone email to say, listening to your ideal bookstore lineup, you know, kind of your features, thinks they tick all of them.
Okay.
Lilac trees in front, big south-facing windows, yes, in the college town, hardwood floors, comfy chairs, coffee, tea, snacks. Didn't think of this. Alcoholic beverages, you know, a little after dark. Mm-hmm. You know, once the clock strikes noon, you turn your glass over, turn your mug over, and pick up your glass. Music is picked by the staff, handwritten shelf talkers, you know, good merch, cute logo, and there's a bookstore dog. So there you go.
And there's a bookstore dog. Well, now I've got to make myself a road trip to Ames, Iowa, I guess.
Yeah. And Lovey is a trained therapy animal, so you can go there and get some healing snuggles while you're drinking your wine at 12:30. Competing email, though, from another listener about our assembling our dream or perfect independent bookstore says, you can't have dogs or animals and a cafe in the same location because of health. So I don't know, dog-eared books, if they have to keep that on the DL, maybe the therapy animal, you know, like having an ostrich on a plane, there's a little of exception. If it's trained, you got the right paperwork, you can make something happen here. But I will take my coffee over the animal. Mm-hmm. That's just me. But I apologize in arrears to any bookstore that may have felt like I was giving them an unfair shake by asking for both, you know, a latte and a Labrador at the same time.
You know, this at least sheds light on the perpetual question in my soul of how come this bookstore doesn't have a dog.
Yeah, could be health. Could be
good old health codes.
The health inspector. Let's see. I think that was. Oh, this is feedback that came late for the episode. Then I am now getting too late, but I thought I would give myself and us props in talking about the Remarkable Two. Remember the tablet no one cares about? Mm-hmm. Is a thing not a thing? One of the things you or I floated there was, I bet this is really great for like lawyers and stuff, mm-hmm, marking up cases. And we had a lawyer to say, yes, indeed, it's all the rage. We love it.
Cool.
So there you go.
I also
go lawyers.
Got a message from a listener who said that they work in financial services and their firm, mm-hmm, was looking at getting them to use like for marking up client documents. So yes, a double high five for us on that speculation. Yeah. That's
okay.
Great.
So Remarkable too, serving knowledge workers everywhere. I think that's all I had from listener follow-up. Okay.
Well, I have news for you.
Yes.
The results of the summer draft.
I saw this. Come on. All right. I don't have a rabbit's foot. I got no horseshoes. I've got no animal paraphernalia.
You had two in a row, Jeff O'Neill, but you're not going for a hat trick.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about.
It was my turn to win.
Okay. All right. Did they tell us things?
Yeah, they told us things. That we had a lot of single issue or like double issue voters that on both sides. Like I voted for Rebecca because of the Holly Black book or random other ones. But the one that was most frequently mentioned from my list was Holly Black. Sedaris was sort of split the vote. There were folks who voted for you because they liked Sedaris. There were folks who voted for me because they have sort of turned against Sedaris. And then we had a lot of people who did kind of an accounting of, ooh, I liked four of yours but five of his, so he got this one. And then there were some interesting
split ticket.
Yes,
they split the ticket.
And then there were some interesting other versions of the accounting of like Rebecca had six titles that I liked, but Jeff had the one or two that I liked the most. Yeah. So it was kind of all over the place, but I won it handily, and I'm not gonna lie, it feels good to get to report that.
Well, I'm glad for the game. The game's the real winner here.
It's
because
true.
It wouldn't be interesting if you know, you got to have someone knock the champ
and
out from time to time just to keep the matches interesting.
Yeah, we're going to shake up the like the format and the rules of that for the fall draft that we'll do in September. So who knows how that one will go. And we've each won a couple of times now. It feels that feels right. So.
If it, you know, I think if it is true that neither of us picked Book Lovers. Did you pick Book Lovers?
I think I picked it, yeah.
Okay. Just I was gonna say, could we in arrears look at the sales of the books, mm-hmm, because the Book Lovers is outselling the shit out. Oh, excuse me, I'm gonna edit that out now. Out of the Holly Black. Now, are the Holly Black kind of folk more tuned into a show like ours? Are the Emily Henry, you know, they're your representative reader? Sorry, listeners out there, if you're listening to the show, you are not a representative reader in all good ways, but mm-hmm, you just aren't. Neither are we here.
Was speculating over on the comments on the Wheelhouse when we were talking about sort of declining sales of those big authors with each successive entry in their series. That Emily Henry, I was speculating like the third Emily Henry is maybe not as exciting as the first Emily Henry once you know what it's about for people. And they were saying that they had seen sort of middling reviews of Emily Henry, of book lovers on TikTok, and that they thought that might be contributing to that one not being as hot out the gates as the first couple. But it's still hot out the gates compared to almost everything else.
Interesting. Oh, you know what? One more feedback thing. Again, I'm going to anonymize it. But I just enjoyed this, so I thought I'd share with everyone. Had a listener email to talk about one of our recs we did for them for moms, dads, and grads.
Oh, nice.
And it was, I'll share it with you so you can see the details. Again, I don't have an affirmative consent, and there's some maybe potentially identifying information here. That the rec we gave them was something they'd been wondering about, but they hadn't read it yet because they knew the author, and the author was a friend.
Oh.
And if it sucked, they were going to be heartbroken.
Oh, man, I know that feeling.
So we got them over the edge. And they loved it. They like cried during it. They were so happy. I think we're really doing some help. We're helping people, Rebecca. That's what I'm saying. We're making connections. We're fostering here. Just connect. It's okay. Also, lying is a thing, everyone out there. I'm just saying. You can also lie.
Yeah.
If you hate your friend's book, just lie.
I have been there in the I'm afraid to read this because I know this person and what if it's awful. It's never gone that way for what it's worth. No. I probably know more writers than the average person does. Mm-hmm. But that's a very real fear. I'm glad that we could help you get over it. And now that you can celebrate your friend's triumph, that's great.
So there you go. Let's go into Publishers Weekly just for a minute. It's the height of the book selling season. It ends with us. Sold more copies this week than last week. I still can't get over that. Where the Crawdads, climbing back up in the number three spot.
You know,
there's a new paperback, I think, with the movie thing coming. So
the movie's
some
coming
there.
Soon. I went to see Top Gun this weekend, which BT dubs, that's a fantastic way to spend a couple hours.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to wear jean shorts. Should I? just jean shorts alone?
I mean, I'm unprepared to answer that question with that caveat.
The answer to this is no, of course, but I just, you know. Top Gun cosplay can go several different ways.
Jean shorts and a leather jacket. You need a bomber situation.
Think of the chafing. Leather jacket and jean shorts in summer. Rebecca,
yeah, I know. I don't recommend it. Maybe a jumpsuit. Yeah, no. I'm all here for a flight suit.
There's not enough body glide in the world.
That's a sentence. Anyway, the posters for Where the Crawdads Sing are all over the theaters now.
They are. It's coming out soon, right?
I think so.
I know it's on your calendar. Yeah. Did you bedazzle it, the calendar, with Crawdads? Did you just heart it, you know, like last day of school when you were a kid?
Or how did you do it? I sketched it and all of its surrounding flora and fauna. Mm-hmm. I'm going to write a book about it later.
And then I guess, bridging it to book lovers, holding steady, 30,000 copies last week, down a little bit, but still selling relatively strong. The new entrant in the top 10 overall is The Office BFFs. Do you know what I'm talking about? You know what this book is?
Oh, yeah. Is this Jenna Fisher and Angela talking about?
Yes. Okay, yes. Jenna Fisher and what's her name? Yeah. I think that's the official author blurb.
I know
there.
They have a podcast also that I've heard is wonderful, but I haven't listened to it myself.
Yeah. Were you an Office person?
I was. I watched it as it was coming out. I have not been an Office rewatcher, but I'm really not much of a rewatcher. I don't like go back to a series and watch the same episodes over and over, other than, you know, like the big block of cheese episode of The West Wing.
Yes. I'm going to need to see if this, I'm probably the marginal buyer or reader of this book. I like The Office fine, you know, but I like books. I like books about the media I've consumed. Mm-hmm. If they narrate this on audio, that will be the decision maker.
Ooh,
if they
yes.
do not, I'll probably never get to this book. So just putting it out there. I guess that's really it. And the number one this week, like last week, we're really peaking here. It's like cold and flu season. Oh, the places you'll go, 59,000 units, 25,000 more units than anything else.
We should do some guessing about when that will fall out of number one.
I think we have to get through Father's Day. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my sense of it. All right. And then the other thing is book sales for the year. It's too early to talk slump, but print sales fell 6.4% in mid-May. Now we're out of the low single digits like we were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, again, COVID, tough comps, a lot of sales. Still up. But it's down. Number one I guess, was interesting to look at. The number one new release last year was the Anthropocene Reviewed, the John Green thing.
Oh, yeah.
57,000 copies debuted at number one compared to 26,000 copies for the Office BFFs. Office BFFs, that's a lot of Fs in there.
It is. And hard to compete with the built-in marketing machine of John Green.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, it's really hard to see. You know, I think it is just everything is down except for adult fiction, and trade paperback is the least weak format. Trade paperback now, we're even down 3.3% year over year, even with TikTok really coming into its full power. But adult fiction is the only category that's up. Adult fiction down 10%, juvenile nonfiction down 9%, juvenile fiction down 7%, young adult fiction down 3%. Young adult nonfiction down 2.3%. The big news for me this week in my bookish life is I went to a Barnes & Noble.
Oh,
been a
tell
while.
Me.
Had okay. been in Barnes & Noble here in Portland. A big two-floor, kind of like, one of the last... The new Barnes & Nobles are going to smaller formats, mm-hmm. but this is sort of a high-end mall mm-hmm. in Portland suburb here. I went on a Saturday late afternoon. The place was pretty busy.
Memorial Day weekend? That's great.
Yep. So a couple things. I mean, we talk about it and we know it, but there was a whole table just for Atomic Habits by James Clear. just right there. Mm-hmm. That's the tweet. There not only were there's a book talk table, but there were specific hashtag tables, spicy talk, stuff like that.
Interesting.
That was interesting. Reese had her own table.
Okay.
No Oprah table to be found, as far as I could tell. I didn't, scour every inch, but I did, the high traffic areas. No Jenna's Book Club, Today Show thing, mm-hmm. Good Morning America, none of that had its own table, which take that for what it's will. Sarah J. Maas had her own table.
Yeah.
Colleen Hoover had her own table. And this is the feedback loop now, where I think the first order effects of TikTok are big enough, but those are second order effect mm-hmm. things. And you and I talking about them now are third order
yes.
effect things. So this is how it works. This is how word of mouth and virality really happens and sustains. There was a whole table of crawdads, I will never understand that book. You and I have talked about it at length, how we would probably given 100 books to choose from and 50 guesses. And mm-hmm, we wouldn't have guessed mm-hmm. that one to be the thing. So I thought it was interesting, but it seemed to be doing well. A lot of people buying really giant Starbucks, milkshakes. Sure. I mean, caffeinated milkshakes. I mean, just enormous. The teen set, and this is something I forgot when you're 14. We were just talking about this the other day. We were reminiscing our beloved Barnes & Noble in the plaza. Also, going to Barnes & Noble and getting a giant thing when you're 14 or 15 is just something to do.
Yes.
It just is. Mm-hmm. That's a thing you can do.
You can just go hang.
Your parents will let you do it. Yeah, go hang. So, it looks... Barnes & Noble, it looked vibrant. They've updated some of the signage. Mm-hmm. It really looked good.
I was happy
to be there and spend some time.
You'll have to go back at 3:30 on a school day once school starts again, and we'll see if that trend holds until September.
Well, you're already there. I that's kind of redundant for me to go. You're already hanging out there and checking out what everyone's buying. So anyway, there's Alrighty. The updates. So I guess let's do our sponsor break and we'll talk about a couple news stories before we go today. We forgot to mention we're hiring. Some of you know that our beloved Amanda Nelson is going on to bigger and better things. And her position, Amanda-shaped hole is left. And we're going to try to fill some of that. You go to bookriot.com/join us. It's a digital marketing manager. Help us grow our stuff. If that's something you're interested in, we do, media, transparent pay, mm-hmm. Get PTO. The policies.
Yeah, you want the
do
whole
this.
Pitch?
You tell them. This is your job.
Yes.
Yeah, you do the whole thing.
Yeah, so we do have transparent pay. It's on the job listing. We'll put the link in the show mm-hmm. notes. We have offices in Portland, Oregon, and Oregon is how you say that. Portland, Oregon, and Vancouver, British Columbia. If you are in those locations, you can work from the office or be designated you can choose to work from home. And then we have the option to work from Virginia, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, or Illinois as well. And we also have staff and tax jurisdiction in those locations. So you'll see the pay listed for Portland and Vancouver, but we adjust pay up or down based on jurisdiction and the variance for the other locations. So you'll get a sense of the range. You can do your own comparison math about how much the place you live costs relative to the Portland or Vancouver, if you want to sort of get a sense of it. But that's transparent. 4 weeks or 160 hours of PTO per year. We have paid volunteer time, good health insurance, 401k matching, really, really flexible working hours, and I think a very human work environment that allows for being a person who has needs and a life outside of work, along with actual policies that prohibit your boss from texting you outside of business hours.
I would never.
I mean, we only text each other outside of business hours for like, did you see this thing?
Oh, speaking of, yeah. I almost texted to you. I took a picture of it, and I don't know why I didn't, but Target has a book club. Did you know that? Target has a book
maybe?
Club?
Maybe.
Right? That was my reaction.
I guess. I was like, it's not surprising Costco has one.
You had to join the Amazon, Target, or Costco book club and like do the reading and like show up to their hashtag live stream every month. Which one are you picking?
Target.
Target? Really? Why?
I mean, that's closer to my heart, I guess. I like a Target experience. I could pick up a nice candle.
But what about Sarah Gellman at Amazon? Well, she's getting hurt. You're getting hurt her feelings.
That's, I'm not in it for the feelings, Jeff. I'm not here to make friends.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like based on what I know of the selections, I would probably enjoy reading the Amazon picks the most, just from what I've seen over time. So anyway, there's that. Okay, let's get on to a couple news stories. I slipped one in here. One I haven't seen before. Yeah. Did you get a chance to look
just
at it
enough,
at all?
Like, just enough to be like, wow, interesting.
Yeah. So again, is it that interesting? I don't know. I'm the wrong test subject for if something's interesting or not. I know this about myself. I thought this might be. So this is an Australian cookbook called The Tuscan Cookbook. So this is going to be weird for a second. I'm sorry about this. That's got option to be adapted into a feature film. So it's a real cookbook, right? Mm-hmm. And the two women who wrote it, Stephanie Alexander and Maggie Beers, are Australians who moved to Tuscany to start a cooking school. And so I think the way to think about it is the cross under the Tuscan sun with like Julie and
yes,
Julia.
That's
kind of
right.
Vibe is that we're going for. And once you say it like that, sure.
Yeah.
Let's go.
And it's
I'm in.
I think the headline about it's like an adaptation movie of a cookbook is kind of head scratchery, but there's a little detail in the piece that also Stephanie Alexander kept a journal while they were doing this. And so like her diary really of that year informed a lot of it. This feels like I don't know a joint that I would want to see Diane Keaton in. You know,
Diane Keaton
or
wrong Diane Lane
yes.
is in Under the Tuscan Sun. Any Diane?
Oh yeah,
really.
No, but I was thinking Diane Keaton.
Diane Kruger, you know.
Sure.
Lady Di.
Pick a Diane.
Yeah, this doesn't work. Pick a Diane.
Yeah, that one doesn't work. But I mean, they're I think younger than that. I hadn't gotten fully to casting it, but when you do position it as Under the Tuscan Sun meets Julie and Julia, that's a very appealing kind of like women go off and have a fun adventure movie.
I don't, do any actual Tuscans live in Tuscany?
It's a great
Is it all
question.
Expats? Are there any old ruined castles left to renovate or are they all been sucked
it's just
up? Like I need to know
midlife
this
crises
at this point.
Is my
it really is. Tuscany is the convertible to middle-aged white women.
Yes, you buy your flowing linen pants and your big hat and you go to Tuscany.
Cut off your hair, you know, get a bob, nice practical bob. Go out there and cook some stuff. So I will watch this.
Yeah.
I'm sure the vibes will be immaculate.
Yes. Immaculate vibes is probably the way to think about that.
Speaking of Frances Meyer, who wrote Under the Tuscan Sun, she has a memoir coming out. Things have not been easy for Frances Meyer.
Oh, really?
I was reading a blurb. I think I'm going to be into that, actually. I don't know. Neither here nor there. But
I was like, Frances Meyer, do you mean Nancy Myers? Let's talk about movies for a minute. But no,
speaking of immaculate vibes, right?
This
Nancy Meyers done a show about cooking? Seems like she should.
No,
have
but all
point.
The movies always have amazing. The houses in the Nancy Meyers movies have, you know, famously gorgeous kitchens. So
it is funny that they go to they always go to the farmer's market on Long Island to their beautiful kitchen, and then they make pancakes. It's like, wait, what are we doing here? You just bought great artichokes, and you're gonna syrup something. Like, let's see some real cooking. Let's go.
I know. I rewatched Something's Got to Give recently, and they are like making. She and Jack Nicholson are making pancakes in the middle of the night. Diane Keaton and Jack Nicholson.
God, that movie. Jack Nicholson is unbelievable.
I'm truly, really. Wonderful. Oh,
it's really good stuff. Okay, marketing insights. I didn't spend too. This is fascinating. Mm-hmm. So, well, why don't you take this?
Sure.
This is Ingram. You found this. You put in our company Slack. I was like, oh, interesting, yeah. And then kind of let it go after I browsed
this,
it. Where do you want to go?
I think
with this
bubbled up in a non. I think it bubbled up in a non-book related newsletter that I get. But listen, my newsletter habit is well documented, so I can't be relied upon for where the link first showed up. And Ingram followed a bunch of books, like 1,500 titles over the course. Sorry, not 1,500, 150,000. They followed 150,000 titles over the course of 3 years to try to see what they could learn. And this is Ingram is a book distributor, and they also have a publisher arm. So what they could learn about how Amazon sells books, what Amazon does with pricing and the buy box, and what does your sales rank mean and how is it determined? And sort of, if you know those things, could you backdoor your way into changing anything or maybe identifying best practices for how to position the books that you publish on Amazon and hope that they will perform well? There's a lot to pull apart there. It's really interesting, I thought, to see that in terms of sales rank, and it's not surprising when they break down the data, but it's a really steep curve on print where, you know, you've got to sell like about a couple hundred units a day in print to hit the top 100. But to hit the top 100 in ebook, you've got to be selling thousands of units per day. That your sales rank includes your sales history and your average daily movement, not just like the total number of books that you've sold. It's based on the pattern, like the current pattern as it's developing. That's one of the ways that the algorithm takes things into account. And with ebooks, especially those to rank in the top 100, it's really clustered around best-selling titles and also price promotions, which we know that, like, especially with Kindle Unlimited and Amazon published kinds of titles, they will drop that price to zero or drop it very low, and it makes it very appealing, and they place them all over the place on Amazon and they give it a lot of visibility, and then you get a lot of sales for a book that was free or pretty close to free. But that space is really, really crowded and very competitive. Maybe the biggest headline was that most books on Amazon are not discounted.
That's exactly where I was going to go.
Yeah, that, and it's, this should have been, I think, in a giant pop-out box in this analysis, that more than 50% of all books on Amazon are not discounted. About 55% of ebooks are or were over the course of this 3-year study that they did. But in general, most books are not discounted. They tracked what we had seen in 2020 of discounts dropping, that most print books were discounted, that most print books that were discounted, which is fewer than half of them, were discounted by only 10 or 20%. And then last year in 2021, some of the deeper discounts started returning. But the big headline is most books on Amazon are not discounted. And
not only that, most of these titles, I guess, they're trying to look for a representative set.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, 150,000 titles, that's a big sample size. There's some other interesting stuff in there about how they were able to identify price bands of like price points that Amazon seems to like to move items to, presumably because consumers like those, that there were a lot of items originally priced at $100. And so that's like professional and textbook kinds of titles that were, you know, in the $100 range originally, but Amazon will drop them to $23.74 for some reason. $23.74 shows up over and over in this research of like, well, this must be a price point consumers like. That in trade publishing, $19.99 and $24.99 are popular price drops, which does ring that bell of about 10 to 20% discounting off of especially a new hardcover. And then for titles that are listed under $20, the most common discounted price was $9.99. So interesting stuff there. I saw a whole section about ebook pricing and was like ready for a Jeff O'Neill rant, but I don't think they teed us up for that.
No, they really did. They left the red meat in the fridge. They didn't throw it into the lion's cage
And then they also pull out information about the impact of reviews and ratings on both Amazon and Goodreads and sort of combined those. And
Anything jump out to you there? You know, I looked at that and I was like, I couldn't make any correlation.
I think the only nugget there, which has definitely been reflected in like what I've heard of folks trying to promote their pre-orders or promote their books, is that the number of reviews that you have and that your review count is consistently going up seems to be more important than the ratings, as long as you don't have a lot of ratings that are under 3 stars. So I guess from an author perspective, you don't need to freak out if you're not getting 5-star reviews, as long as you're consistently racking up increasing reviews. And I know like folks who host some podcasts that I listen to have had books come out recently, and a big part of their pre-order campaign has been, please go back and review our previous books on Amazon, because that will help our new book rank higher or be visible to more people. And then if you pre-order the new one, that helps us. And then of course, if you review the new one, that helps. But that it's the volume of reviews, and that volume is consistently moving forward.
Okay.
And then, you know, not a whole lot of, you're not going to get rewarded if you have 5 billion 1-star reviews by the algorithm, but you need to be functionally
weird.
Right. Yeah. But above average, 3 stars, if you're average and around 3 stars and you're moving up, you're probably doing okay.
That's our show for this week. Rebecca, thank you so much. As always, you can find show notes, bookriot.com/listen. You can email us, podcast@bookriot.com. Check out the Book Riot Patreon if you haven't. Also, you can check out the job description. If you or someone you know is a digital marketing person, come see if this is the kind of place you might want to apply to. You can find out more there. And as always, we will talk to you next week.